Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Región de Murcia. Pruebas específicas de certificación. Inglés. Nivel C2. Convocatoria Extraordinaria 2022. Comprensión de textos orales.
Task 1. Listen to YouTuber Matt C. Smith giving tips about how to be a virtual host at an online event. Choose the sentence below, A to J, that best matches each extract, 1 to 8, according to what is said in the recording. There are two sentences that you do not need. The first item is an example. Write the corresponding letters, A to J, on the answer sheet, in spaces 1 to 8. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to read the task. Example.
You're looking at a camera, right? When you have a large audience, you can look around the audience. And some of the advice I give to that is, you know, doing a north, south, you know, east, west, kind of looking around an audience, interacting with an audience. But when you're online only, you're just staring at a camera. So my first advice is always look at the camera, right? Unless you have a co-host like I've had, Uriah, in a lot of the streams I've done.
Extract number one.
There are always tech troubles. Hopefully not in every stream you have, but I've had times when, you know, you've spoken to a guest beforehand and check the audio, check the video of their feed, and it's all great. Go live and you have trouble. So if you have trouble, don't pause. Don't go, oh, okay, yeah, we'll get back. Mm-hmm, okay, and then be quiet and silent. If someone's watching this, they're expecting a show.
Extract number two.
If the show goes down, talk to the audience and talk the audience through it. Don't go, all right, we'll be back in a minute. They won't come back. Don't say that, you know, carry on doing what you're doing. They'll leave too. So if you just play that it's part of the program, be like, oh, okay, no worries. While he's doing that, I'm going to tell you what I did today. Or if you're lucky enough to have other people on the call, direct a conversation to one of them while they fix their problem. Also, I've done things where I'm like, look, ladies and gentlemen, this is live. Anything can happen. And we're going to get through this thing.
Extract number three.
Another one to think about is the set design, because, you know, this virtual world we live in now, we get to see what everyone's living rooms look like, right? Which is kind of fun. And some people have beautiful bookshelves. Some people have, you know, I've actually seen someone do it in their garage. But think about the set design. What's behind you? You know, the worst thing you want to see is you know, a bed that's unmade behind you. It shows you that you're a, you know, sloppy person or something.
Extract number 4.
And another point is lighting. I have a big light facing me from the front right now, right? It's out of shot, but what it's doing is casting some light in my face and shadow behind. The worst thing you want to do is have a light behind you, because it means you'll cast a light on the back of your head and onto the camera, so the camera will think it's in, you know, overexposed in the sunlight, and your face will turn into a silhouette. So make sure that you have a light that's facing you, not from behind you. You can do this by simply having a window in front of you, or if you're lucky enough to own a light, or, you know, take...
Extract number 5.
Another point is that you're live right now, so you should try to interact with your audience, try to keep them engaged. You've seen some of the streams that I've done. I often go, tag your flag. If it's international people, tag right now where you are. But also, people often are reluctant to write anything, so think about other things that they can do. Now, on Facebook, you can share a feeling, you can post an emoji. So maybe you can do that. You know, hey everyone, that's a good one actually, I haven't done that yet. Post your favorite emoji right now. Tag one of their team members, or tag their company, or tag someone they think this would be relevant to. It means now all of a sudden your stream is getting a lot of engagement. It's increasing the engagement.
Extract number 6.
Also, think about before the stream. Now, I want you to think about your live broadcast as a TV channel, because a TV channel, and like a TV channel, and has programs scheduled, right? And do you think they go live at 8 p.m. with the news without promoting that the news is going live at 8 p.m.? No. So you should do the same with for your show. So if you're going to go live streaming on a Facebook or YouTube channel, let people know about it. Don't just go live and expect people to watch. If you go live just randomly, you know, you might get a few stragglers who just happen to be on Facebook at that time who were following you. But if you basically tag the right people, do the right...
Extract number 7.
During as well. So I've spoken up before and after. So build up to when you're live, and when you're on after your live, reshare later on different channels. But during your live session, if you're lucky enough to have some support, get them to post, you know, while you're live, and say, we are live right now, about to have this session, and things like that. That's quite valuable.
Extract number 8.
There are a lot of live streams right now, so think about how you can make yours better than the others. One way you can do that is by having sound effects, playing music at the beginning. It can be as simple as just playing music on your laptop. I've done it a lot now. Finding a jingle that you stay with, so people get used to your jingle. Thank you for watching this video. Make sure to like and subscribe so you never...
Example.
You're looking at a camera, right? When you have a large audience, you can look around the audience, and some of the advice I give to that is, you know, doing a north, south, you know, east, west, kind of looking around an audience, interacting with an audience. But when you're online only, you're just staring at a camera. So my first advice is always look at the camera, right? Unless you have a co-host like I've had earlier in a lot of the streams I've done.
Extract number one.
There are always tech troubles. Hopefully not in every stream you have, but I've had times when, you know, you've spoken to a guest beforehand and checked the audio, checked the video of their feed, and it's all great. Go live and you have trouble. So if you have trouble, don't pause. Don't go, oh, okay, yeah, we'll get back. Mm-hmm, okay, and then be quiet and silent. If someone's watching this, they're expecting a show.
Extract number two.
If the show goes down, talk to the audience and talk the audience through it. Don't go, all right, we'll be back in a minute. They won't come back. Don't say that, you know, carry on doing what you're doing. They'll leave too. So if you just play that it's part of the program, be like, oh, okay, no worries. While he's doing that, I'm going to tell you what I did today. Or if you're lucky enough to have other people on the call, direct a conversation to one of them while they fix their problem. Also, I've done things where I'm like, look, ladies and gentlemen, this is live. Anything can happen. And we're going to get through this together.
Extract number three.
Another one to think about is the set design, because, you know, this virtual world we live in now, we get to see what everyone's living rooms look like, right? Which is kind of fun. And some people have beautiful bookshelves. Some people have, you know, I've actually seen someone do it in their garage. But think about the set design. What's behind you? You know, the worst thing you want to see is you know, a bed that's unmade behind you. It shows that you're a, you know, sloppy person or something.
Extract number four.
And another point is lighting. I have a big light facing me from the front right now, right? It's out of shot, but what it's doing is casting some light in my face and shadow behind. The worst thing you want to do is have a light behind you, because it means you'll cast a light on the back of your head and onto the camera. So the camera will think it's in, you know, overexposed in the sunlight, and your face will turn into a silhouette. So make sure that you have a light that's facing you, not from behind you. You can do this by simply having a window in front of you, or if you're lucky enough to own a light, or, you know, take.
Extract number five.
Another point is that you're live right now, so you should try to interact with your audience, try to keep them engaged. You've seen some of the streams that I've done. I often go, tag your flag. If it's international people, tag right now where you are. But also, people often are reluctant to write anything, so think about other things that they could do. Now, on Facebook, you can share a feeling, you can post an emoji. So maybe you can do that. You know, hey everyone, that's a good one actually, I haven't done that yet. Post your favorite emoji right now. Tag one of their team members, or tag their company, or tag someone they think this would be relevant to. It means now all of a sudden your stream is getting a lot of engagement. It's increasing the engagement.
Extract number six.
Also, think about before the stream. Now, I want you to think about your live broadcast as a TV channel, because a TV channel, unlike a TV channel, and has programs scheduled, right? And do you think they go live at 8 p.m. with the news without promoting that the news is going live at 8 p.m.? No. So you should do the same with for your show. So if you're going to go live streaming on a Facebook or YouTube channel, let people know about it. Don't just go live and expect people to watch. If you go live just randomly, you know, you might get a few stragglers who just happen to be on Facebook at that time who were following you. But if you basically tag the right people, do the right.
Extract number seven.
During as well. So I've spoken up before and after. So build up to when you're live, and when you're on after your live, reshare later on different channels. But during your live session, if you're lucky enough to have some support, get them to post, you know, while you're live, and say, we are live right now, about to have this session, and things like that. That's quite valuable.
Extract number eight.
There are a lot of live streams right now, so think about how you can make yours better than the others. One way you can do that is by having sound effects, playing music at the beginning. It can be as simple as just playing music on your laptop. I've done it a lot now. Finding a jingle that you stay with, so people get used to your jingle. Thank you for watching this video. Make sure to like and subscribe so you never.
Task 2. Listen to an interview with MJ Rodriguez, an actress who starred in the series Pose. For items 9 to 16, choose the best option, A, B, or C, according to the recording. The first item is an example. Write the corresponding letters, A, B, or C, on the answer sheet, in spaces 9 to 16. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to read the task.
I'm happy you're here too.
This is a fantastic show created by Ryan Murphy, and it's sort of, it's about the underground ball culture in New York in the 80s and 90s. And for those who don't know what that is, lay it out.
Okay, well, I mean, the ballroom culture that really started in New York City, underground ballroom culture, it's a place where a lot of LGBT community members, they go to, they find refuge, they find comfort, they get to be who they truly want to be, and they just get to live their lives completely and find the people that they feel most comfortable with to raise them, lift them up in ways that they never thought before.
And you're from Newark?
Yes, I am.
And did you come into the city? Did you find your way into this culture?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I mean, I was 14 years old in high school. I went to a school called Arts High in Newark, New Jersey. And that's actually where my house father at the time found me. I was walking, I think, one of his fashion shows or just a fashion show in general at school. And he saw me. He was like, that's my daughter. And I actually met him through a couple of my friends before I had even seen him. They were immersed in the ballroom scene before I had even gotten hip to it. And it just sprawled out from there.
So for those who don't know the terminology, explain what a house father or house mother is.
Okay, so a house father, a house mother, those are the people that upkeep the house that they've created. So, for example, the house of La Beja, they'll have a house father and a house mother to be the kind of matriarch and the monarch of the house to make sure that everything is okay. The kids are learning. They'll teach them voguing lessons. They'll give them everything that they need that their other parents wouldn't give.
What is the first lesson of voguing? What is the first thing you learn?
I mean, there's so many things that you can learn. You can learn duck walking, but we're not going to do that right now because I got some heels on.
Okay, great.
But there's like hand performance, and there's many elements to it that you have to incorporate in order to do it.
And it seems like precision is a very important part of it.
Yes, you can't be sloppy. I remember when I was younger, my house father at the time, I snuck out and I went to a rehearsal at Ripley Greer, and he said, "Let's see what you got." And I got up there and I did. It was called Fembogen. And I got up there and I did a complete messy job. And
really?
He was like, "What is that?" He's like, "What is that?" And I said, "It was smoking, right?" He said, "No, Nino, who's one of his house sons."
Yeah.
He was like, "Show her what it's all about." And I was like, "All right, cool."
It seems like the underground ball culture pretty open with their feedback. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. Very.
Nobody
open
like ever keeps their opinion to themselves.
No, but you have to add the space of honesty. It's a space of comfort. So they'll let you have it right then and there. They will read you down, and you're like, "Thank you."
And you play a house mother in the show.
I do.
Who did you draw inspiration from? Was there anyone in your life that you were?
My mama.
Yeah.
My mama, she comes with me every single place I go. And she was always that pillar for me to look up to, alongside many LGBT members that were very, very strong in my life. But she was that one that kept me sturdy and kept me sane. And she just made sure I kept on the right path. So
you got to bring your mom to the Golden Globes last year. How was it? Was she excited? Did you have a great time?
Oh, yeah, we were very excited. We were in the bathroom doing like a movie number, singing in the mirror. Everything. It was epic.
Were there any people you were particularly excited to see?
So many people. But I remember seeing Bradley Cooper sitting like right across from me, and I was like, "Oh my God, that's Bradley." Is he going to see me?
You also went to the Met Ball for the first time this year.
I did.
Like $1 million, no less.
Yes, I did.
And that is another incredible night for people watching. Did you get the full experience? Did you get to see the people you wanted to see that night as well?
I got to see every single last person I wanted to see. And more so than anything, I felt so included and accepted. I walked up and shook Anna Wintour's hand, and I was like, "You're Anna Wintour." "Oh, okay." And then the next person was Lady Gaga, and she just grabbed me, and she said some really, really wonderful, like, encouraging words, and I cried.
That's all right. It's a very good play. They always say, if you need a good cry, go to the Met Ball.
Go to the Met Ball, and you will cry your eyes out.
Hey, thank you so much for being here,
of
and
course.
Congratulations on everything.
I'm happy I'm here, too.
This is a fantastic show created by Ryan Murphy, and it's sort of, it's about the underground ball culture in New York in the 80s and 90s. And for those who don't know what that is, lay it out.
Okay, well, I mean, the ball culture, ballroom culture that really started in New York City, underground ballroom culture, it's a place where a lot of LGBT community members, they go to, they find refuge, they find comfort, they get to be who they truly want to be, and they just get to live their lives completely and find the people that they feel most comfortable with to raise them, lift them up in ways that they never thought before.
And you're from Newark?
Yes, I am.
And did you find your way, did you come into the city? Did you find your way into this culture?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I mean, I was was 14 years old in high school. I went to a school called Arts High in Newark, New Jersey. And that's actually where my house father at the time found me. I was walking, I think, one of his fashion shows or just a fashion show in general at school. And he saw me. He was like, that's my daughter. And I actually met him through a couple of my friends before I had even seen him. They were immersed in the ballroom scene before I had even gotten hip to it. And it just sprawled out from there.
So for those who don't know the terminology, explain what a house father or house mother is.
Okay, so a house father, a house mother, those are the people that upkeep the house that they've created. So for example, the house of La Beja, they'll have a house father and a house mother to be the kind of matriarch and the monarch of the house to make sure that everything is okay. The kids are learning. They'll teach them voguing lessons. They'll give them everything that they need that their other parents wouldn't give.
What is the first lesson of voguing? What is the first thing you learn?
I mean, there's so many things that you can learn. You can learn duck walking, but we're not going to do that right now because I got some heels on.
Okay, great.
But there's hand performance, and there's many elements to it that you have to incorporate in order to do it.
And it seems like precision is a very important part of it.
Yes, you can't be sloppy. I remember when I was younger, my house father at the time, I snuck out and I went to a rehearsal at Ripley Greer, and he said, let's see what you got. And I got up there and I did, it was called femboguing, and I got up there and I did a complete messy job. And
really?
He was like, what is that? He's like, what is that? And I said, it was voguing, right? He said, no. Nino, who's one of his house sons,
yeah,
he was like, show her what it's all about. And I was like, all right, cool.
It seems like the underground ball culture, pretty open with their feedback, yes?
Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
Nobody, like, ever keeps their opinion to themselves.
No, but you have to add that. It's a space of honesty. It's a space of comfort. So they'll let you have it right then and there. They will read you down. And you're like, thank you.
And you play a house mother in the show.
I do.
Who did you draw inspiration from? Was there anyone in your life that you were...
My mama.
Yeah.
My mama, she comes with me every single place I go, and she was always that pillar for me to look up to, alongside many LGBT members that were very, very strong in my life. But she was that one that kept me sturdy and kept me sane, and she just made sure I kept on the right path. So
you got to bring your mom to the Golden Globes last year. How was it? Was she excited? Did you have a great time?
Oh, yeah, we were very excited. We were in the bathroom doing, like, a movie number, singing in the mirror and everything. It was epic.
Were there any people you were particularly excited to see?
So many people. But I remember seeing Bradley Cooper sitting, like, right across from me, and I was like, oh, my God, that's Bradley Cooper. Is he gonna see me?
You also went to the Met Ball for the first time this year.
I did.
Like $1 million, no less.
Yes, I did.
And that is another incredible night for people watching. Did you get the full experience? Did you get to see the people you wanted to see that night as well?
I got to see every single last person I wanted to see. And more so than anything, I felt so included and accepted. I walked up and shook Anna Wintour's hand, and I was like, you're Anna Wintour. Oh, okay. And then the next person was Lady Gaga, and she just grabbed me, and she said some really, really wonderful, like, encouraging words, and I cried.
That's all right. It's a very good play. They always say, if you need a good cry, go to the Met Ball.
Go to the Met Ball, and you will cry your eyes out.
Hey, thank you so much for being here, and congratulations on everything.
Task 3. Listen to an Irish radio show about how they deal with climate change in Oslo. For items 17 to 26, complete the gaps with one suitable word from the recording. The first item is an example. Write your final answers on the answer sheet, in spaces 17 to 26. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to read the task.
Gert, I am fascinated by this organization that you are a member of. Tell me exactly what the organization is.
Well, C40 is the world's largest climate network for megacities of the world. In all altogether, the 10% of the people on the planet live in these cities. 25% of the world's GDP is produced in these cities.
Now, the extraordinary thing is that no Irish city, we can come back to that, but it's worth reiterating for our audience in particular. Not one Irish city is a member of this. It shows two things, I think, and we can talk about this in a little while. Number one is the fact that Irish cities do not have sufficient centralized power. Irish power is all centralized in the government. They are terrified of having directly elected mayors and our decentralized power, whether it's tax raising or whether it's policy implementing, but you need to have both, really. That's number one. So even if an Irish city mayor did rock up, it would be more cosmetic than real. And the second thing I also think is maybe we're not taking this as seriously as we should. But Gauda, tell me what sort of initiatives are orchestrated at the C40 level and how do they percolate down before I talk about Oslo itself?
Well, the cities, the whole idea here is that the cities need to learn from each other. We have very short time towards 2030, or we had short time to save the planet to reach the 1.5 degree target. So here is, it's a question of steal with pride, copy paste, find the solution that works best in any city and paste, copy paste it in your own city and scale it up. It's a scaling machine. It's a copy paste machine. It's about cities learning from one another. That's the whole idea. So the whole thing here is that mayors learn from each other and city administrations, city bureaucrats learn best practice from each other.
Now, can I ask you about Oslo? Is the Oslo mayor directly elected and has executive powers? Can I ask you how it's structured just before we talk about the what's going on in Oslo?
Yes, he is. The people elect for the parties and the parties select their mayor.
Okay, but the mayor has tax raising powers within Oslo itself.
Yes.
And so therefore they have a budget internally that they can say, okay, we're going to deploy this budget here or there. So the buck does actually stop with the mayor. If you're an Oslo citizen, if you're the average Osloer and you're knocking around and you're fed up about something or you think that we could do something better here or whatever, you know that the buck stops with the mayor. Is that the case?
Yeah, you can elect those politicians that would allocate resources the way you would like it to be allocated.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, one thing I was fascinated was this idea of a carbon budget. Explain this to me, because this is something that Oslo is doing. What is it? It seems to be highly effective in zeroing in at responsibility. So explain this to me.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting concept they have developed in Oslo called the climate budget. And the whole idea is that it shifts the focus from the long-term targets, the visions that most cities and nations have, 2030, 2040, 2050, even some 2060. Can you believe that? That gives a trajectory line from now on until then, which is quite steep. And that makes it possible for them to do the math and calculate down on annual level what we need to cut. So what they've started to do is they've started to creating budgets like we create the fiscal budget with the monetary in Norway, it's the kroner in Europe.
Gauta, I am fascinated by this organization that you are a member of. Tell me exactly what the organization is.
Well, C40 is the world's largest climate network for megacities of the world. In all together, the 10% of the people on the planet live in these cities. 25% of the world's GDP is produced in these cities.
Now, the extraordinary thing is that no Irish city, we can come back to that, but it's worth reiterating for our audience in particular. Not one Irish city is a member of this. It shows two things, I think, and we can talk about this in a little while. Number one is the fact that Irish cities do not have sufficient centralized power. Irish power is all centralized in the government. They are terrified of having directly elected mayors and our decentralized power, whether it's tax raising or whether it's policy implementing, but you need to have both, really. That's number one. So even if an Irish city mayor did rock up, it would be more cosmetic than real. And the second thing I also think is maybe we're not taking this as seriously as we should. But Gauta, tell me what sort of initiatives are orchestrated at the C40 level and how do they percolate down before I talk about Oslo itself?
Well, the cities, the whole idea here is that the cities need to learn from each other. We have very short time towards 2030, or we had short time to save the planet to reach the 1.5 degree target. So here is, it's a question of steal with pride, copy paste, find a solution that works best in any city and paste, copy paste it in your own city and scale it up. It's a scaling machine. It's a copy paste machine. It's about cities learning from one another. That's the whole idea. So the whole thing here is that mayors learn from each other and city administrations, city bureaucrats learn best practice from each other.
Now, can I ask you about Oslo? Is the Oslo mayor directly elected and has executive powers? Can I ask you how it's structured just before we talk about the what's going on in Oslo?
Yes, he is the people elect for the parties and the parties select their mayor.
Okay, but the mayor has tax-raising powers within Oslo itself.
Yes.
And so therefore they have a budget internally that they can say, okay, we're going to deploy this budget here or there. So the buck does actually stop with the mayor. If you're an Oslo citizen, if you're the average Osloer and you're knocking around and you're fed up about something or you think that we could do something better here or whatever, you know that the buck stops with the mayor. Is that the case?
Yeah, you can elect those politicians that would allocate resources the way you would like it to be allocated.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, one thing I was fascinated was this idea of a carbon budget. Explain this to me, because this is something that Oslo is doing. What is it? It seems to be highly effective in zeroing in at responsibility. So explain this to me.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting concept they have developed in Oslo called the climate budget. And the whole idea is that it shifts the focus from the long-term targets, the visions that most cities and nations have, 2030, 2040, 2050, even some 2060. Can you believe that? That gives a trajectory line from now on until then, which is quite steep. And that makes it possible for them to do the math and calculate down on annual level what we need to cut. So what they've started to do is they've started to creating budgets like we create the fiscal budget with the monetary, in Norway, it's the kroner, in Europe.
Fin de la prueba.